It's the Ag Ship Podcast. I'm Patrick Mayhorn, creator of the Ag Ship, a credentialed newsletter covering Utah State athletics. You can subscribe at www.theagship.com for all of the written content, cover stories, game notebooks, game previews, game reviews, all sorts of good stuff over there. Goes all year round. There is no off season in college athletics. There is something of a hypothetical off season, but the site will be going all year round. The content will continue flowing as normal. There's all sorts of stuff over there on the site right now. We've got kind of a bonus episode for you here. I'm joined as always by co-host Parker Ballantyne. Parker, we've got something probably worth talking about on this show. I think we couldn't just not record a podcast after what happened on Friday.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. We always have something worth talking about. This is definitely goes beyond that in every sense of the phrase. I mean, this was incredible. I'm feeling on top of the world still, and it's been 24 hours almost, I think, since that game was finalized. Maybe not quite, actually, because we had the late tip. But this is something I've been waiting for forever. I'm stoked to be able to talk about it here. Like you said, we couldn't not talk about it, so here we are talking about it. So
yeah,
I'm stoked.
We couldn't miss the chance to talk about something on a podcast that I think probably, unless like maybe there were some very, I don't know that they would have even been called podcasts at this point. I don't know that anyone like outside of the last 24 hours has ever recorded a podcast after a Utah State win in the NCAA tournament. Because it had been 23 years. I don't know that they were doing podcasts in 2001. So this is...
Wow. We're making history.
Yeah.
This is awesome. I didn't even think about that. As a thought exercise, all of the other listeners, go back and think of all the things that we enjoy today that didn't exist when this happened last. There's more than a few, I think, that we... It's been a while. Let's leave it at that, man. Yeah,
been since March 15th, I believe, 2001, when Utah State beat Ohio State in an overtime game in the round of 64. Since then, there had been, it was technically speaking 10 tournament losses. I don't really count the second round loss in 2001 as part of the losing streak because they won a game in the tournament.
That was round of 32.
Yes.
Right?
But a round of 64 losing streak of 9 games, 23 years, now over, now snapped. Utah State no longer on an NCAA tournament losing streak. In fact, on an emphatic, dominant one-game winning streak in the NCAA tournament, with an 88-72 victory over TCU. I say it, I check to make sure that score is right. It is 88-72 victory over TCU. Utah State advances to the round of 32, where it will take on top-seeded Purdue in Indianapolis, basically a home game for Purdue. That is the nature of the beast with this specific tournament field, because it's the same deal for every one seed. They all had like an ideal location that they wanted to go to, and they all landed in those locations. I think North Carolina is like the only one that didn't get exactly what it was after, because it was the fourth number one, but That's what you're up against. That is the benefit of being a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, and that is what Utah State will have to reckon with, as well as the quality of a Purdue team that is 30-4 and earned a one seed. We're going to talk about that game a little bit, but before we can do that, we would not be doing the show justice if we did not talk about the game that was on Friday night.
The one that made history.
The one that made history.
The reason we're recording this instead of sticking to our regular cadence.
Yeah.
That one. That's the one we need to talk about.
Yeah. The one that has cast the Utah State faithful into a state of euphoria that I don't know if I've ever seen from a fan base before. This level of just like relief and joy and excitement about a single game, and that is not to devalue the game. It's a very important game for Utah State, and it is that response is extremely well merited. But it's been really cool. I think that that's the place that I have to kind of start with this, is the response to it and everything that happened afterward. This program has, I think, long deserved a little bit more success, at least in March and in this tournament. There were so many times where just one or two bounces go a different way and Utah State is not on the losing streak that it was on. There were so many tight games within that stretch. There were so many, I would say, wildly underseeded Stu Morrill teams in the mix there, yeah, that deserved better than they got. But this is the one that gets it done. This is the Utah State team that breaks through, and does so with, I think, one of the most dominant and impressive performances that I have seen from a Utah State team. I've been covering the basketball team now. I've been covering Utah State now for 2 years. I've seen, I don't know how many games, it'd be approaching 70 probably at this point. I think this was probably the best individual performance that I have seen from Utah State. They were so, so, so ready for the moment. They were so ready to do this, and they played played completely comfortably. They set the tone of the game. Really, after the first 6 minutes or so, it was pretty much just dictated by Utah State. If you were a conference logo scout guy, right, where you're just, they're from the Big 12, so they're going to be more physical and more athletic, and you're doing all of that, and you scrubbed all of the proper nouns off of this game, both teams were wearing blank uniforms, you would think that Utah State was from the big bad Big 12, because they just took it to TCU. I mean, they beat the hell out of them. They really, really just beat the hell out of them. Where do you want to go first with this?
Yeah. So, well, here's where I want to go with this. Just for kind of for the listeners' background, knowing what we're doing here, we kind of mentioned this at the top. We're really just jumping on the mic here to throw something out there. We can't not talk about this game, so we're going to talk about this game. This is not the normal episode that you're usually going to get. This is more of like, you know, the emergency pod that we that you see so often in the industry. We're going to be quick with this. We're not going to get into this game the way that this game really deserves. If you want that, dear listener, Patrick isn't going to plug his own work. I will plug it for him. Go read the cover story that he put together on this. I think it's some of your best work, Patrick, to be honest with you, and that's saying something, because you put together a lot of good, really, really good work. Maybe I'm biased because of how much this game meant to me, but that Patrick Mahorn was an instant classic. That one, it might end up on my wall at some point.
Thank you.
So if you're looking for more on that game, go read that. It's on the website. It should be in your inbox. But in the meantime, where do I want to go with this? I want to just kind of hone in on something you mentioned as we talked about this game. This was probably one of the best games that Utah State has played. And I know that's probably a sentence it feels like we throw around a lot. But it was, man. Like, there was just a lot of people on this team did a lot of things well, and not a lot of people made very many mistakes. Like, I can remember one, like, where Khalifa missed a kind of an alley-oop, and it was like, oh, what a bummer. And then he followed it up with like six quick points and looked flawless the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Like, there was just not very many mistakes. Everybody played very, very well. And this is the result of that. You beat a Big 12 team by 16 points and you get out of the round of 64.
Yeah.
This is kind of that type of game that we've been missing. We had all the right tools. Now, that might be something that we've had before. Maybe we have had the right tools going into the round of 64 before, like you mentioned. I think we have, but they misfired, or we didn't quite have the edge. We, you know, the ball bounced the other way.
Yeah.
This team eliminated any of that. It seemed pretty clear about halfway through the first half, Utah State was going to win this game one way or another.
Yeah.
No matter how the ball decided to start bouncing, Utah State was going to find a way to win this game. That was led by Darius Brown from a visual perspective, from a vibes-based perspective. And in scoring, there was others that scored more than him, but I think that effort and that determination was, as it has been all year, led by Darius Brown.
10 points, 10 assists, 4 rebounds, and 2 steals for Darius Brown. He did more than would be captured on the stat sheet. He really, as he always does, he really set the stage defensively for what Utah State wanted to do, and I think was the most critical cog within that made it go. I thought that it, like, the offense has had explosive games before. The offense has had games before where several players are stepping up and making big plays, and I'm sure I think the offense has probably had games where 4 guys finish in double figures, which is what they had here, and then there were 2 others at 8 in Mason Fosslev and Josh Adjei. It's probably done that before this season. I don't know that the defense has been as cohesive and as just like smothering as it was, and Darius Brown played a huge role in that. With the amount of ground that he is able to cover, the number of hats he can wear at once defensively, and I really think, like, the offense was terrific. The offense got huge contributions from pretty much everybody who stepped on the floor. Ian Martinez was great, just doing what he does, hitting tough shots, getting to the free throw line. He was 8 of 8 at the stripe. Didn't turn the ball over once in 36 minutes, which I thought was huge for him. He finished with 21. Obviously there's the Isaac Johnson,
Yeah,
just
we gotta
stretch.
mention
Yeah,
it.
the stretch where Isaac Johnson was just completely untouchable and was the best player on the floor, and he finishes with a career high 19 points, 3 boards, 4 blocks, and an assist. He knocked down a couple of triples. He was just TCU is so focused on guarding Great Osabor, and Isaac Johnson recognized that and seemingly just took offense to it and completely changed the dynamic of this game, and I think really took whatever wind was left in TCU sails out of its sails. It was when a guy who doesn't usually score 19 points comes into a game and does that, it is just demoralizing, and he was so good, and his energy was so good. Offensively, defensively, Great Osabor obviously contributes as he usually does. Didn't get to the free throw line a ton, but he still had 13, 7, and 4, with 2 steals as well. Just everybody who played contributed. I thought that the overall team defense was what made this game, though. The offense was great. The amount that Utah State did of disrupting passing lanes, of varying its defensive looks, bouncing back and forth between man to man and the kind of inverted 1-3-1 with Darius Brown on the baseline. TCU is a very, very capable offensive team, and it had no answers. It was not even, it wasn't that it had answers but couldn't execute. They were just standing there. They didn't know what to do with that. They had no solution for it. TCU turned the ball over 13 times or 14 times. Utah State made 10 of those happen directly with steals. Mason Fosslev was super active. Everybody was active, and Utah State really took a TCU team that likes to run, likes to try and run teams out of the gym. That's the main thing that TCU does, is that they'll beat you with athleticism and size. They'll get the you know they'll bring up the tempo of the game, and then they'll run you out of the gym. Utah State, with the way that it approached this game, schematically, I think on both ends, and then with the way that it executed, turning the ball over only 9 times, I think that, like, 6 of them were steals, so you only really have the 3 unforced turnovers. There was, I think, one or 2 Great Osabor turnovers that were specifically kind of rough. There was one where he, like, dribbled behind his back on a transition opportunity and just dribbled out of bounds. There was another one where he threw, like, a full court pass straight out of bounds. But other than that, Utah State just did not give TCU the opportunity to play that game, and Utah State instead played the game. Utah State looked like the bigger and more athletic and faster team. Crushed TCU on transition points. I think it was like 25-7. They made a big athletic team look small and incapable of keeping up. And I think they did that schematically. I think that they did that with execution. It was everything. It was every single thing that they did was designed to do that, and they executed it perfectly.
Yeah, I think the other thing that they did was find a way to get Great Osabor activated and just unstoppable. He was unstoppable in the post. TCU really didn't have an answer for what Great Osabor was doing underneath the basket when Great had the ball in his hands. It was the offense was purring. That was one thing that we came into this game kind of expecting. Their interior defense was not impressive. And that showed against Utah State. Utah State was able to take advantage of that. The other thing, just to reiterate kind of what you said, like the performances top to bottom were great. Javon Jackson, I thought was even that far down where Jackson played 5 minutes, he stepped in, just hit a three and checked out. That's the type of performance you need from just about everybody. It was both sides of the ball from the coaching staff. You mentioned the schematics. That's a huge, huge part of this. Down to the execution, not sure you could have asked for much better.
Yeah, it was pretty much flawless, I think. I really don't like you would have to be you have to look pretty hard to find things in this Utah State performance to take issue with. I mean,
Right.
it was like the first 6 minutes of the game, they were kind of getting a feel for the pace of TCU and for the flow of the game. I think that they had to adjust a tiny bit to the way that the NCAA tournament is officiated, which works really well in their favor once they find that
Yeah, that's for
physicality.
sure.
Because like I mentioned this stat in the cover story. This is a stat that a friend of the show Lance sent to me today. There were 26 combined fouls in this game. Do you know Parker? The last time, yeah, I guess you read the story. It's been since. So I'll tell the listeners that it's been since November 28th that Utah State has had few that has had that few or fewer combined fouls in a game. Every
Wow.
single Mountain West game was up over 30 at a minimum. They were
Yeah,
like two or three
yep.
at 30, and then everything else was up over that even. And so Utah State, I think once it got a feel for that, it's like, oh, they're gonna let us play basketball. That
Yeah, they're gonna
was,
let us play the sport that we're here to
yeah,
play.
that was pretty much it. I think once Utah State recognized that it could do that, TCU just didn't have the bodies to keep up. It didn't have the ability to hang with that sort of physicality and that level of aggression from every single position on the floor. TCU won the rebounding battle. It had second chance points. It had, a bunch of offensive rebounds, more than Utah State would have liked, but
Yeah.
you can live with that if
Yeah.
they're not doing anything else, and they couldn't do anything else. They had almost as many offensive rebounds as they had made shots. They had 21 offensive rebounds and 24 made shots. It's not really doing you all that much good when you're getting offensive rebounds for an offense that can't do anything.
Yeah.
And Utah State on the other end, just everybody was aggressive. Everybody was physical. Mason Fosslev loves this kind of game. This is the exact kind of game that Mason Fosslev wants to play, and
Yeah.
he took advantage on both ends of the floor. He was great with the off-ball defense. He was great initiating on offense. I thought Josh Adugie, same thing. All of them. They all took to it so well, and I think that this team is really, honestly, I think it's built better for that sort of environment, for that level of leniency on the whistle than it is certainly for the Mountain West play, which is way too quick
Right,
to call
yeah.
those fouls. Like, this is what Utah State is built to do, and TCU, which comes from a very physical league and a league where you can get away with more contact, still looked just shell-shocked, just completely taken aback by the amount of physicality and aggression that it was dealing with. And I think they just panicked. It seemed pretty often like TCU was disjointed and not really sure how to proceed, and it made a bunch of mistakes. Utah State forced a ton of those mistakes. Utah State put the heat on them and just never really turned it off.
Yeah, and the officiating is a huge part of this. Again, this is a show where we're trying to move quickly through this, just for the sake of time. Honestly, I think what will probably happen is once our tournament run is over, we will go back to our, marathon barn burning show and kind of talk about all of these games again. But I do want to mention that officiating because it's something that has not only been noticed by us or by a few fans. It's a pretty widespread thing, at least from what I'm seeing. The fans of every Mountain West have noticed this, and then even statistically, it plays out that stat that you mentioned. The last time we had this few fouls was before we started playing in the conference, so that is an issue, and I think that plays into what we've talked about, is like how flawless and well-oiled this team looked. It looked like a team. It looked like a basketball team that was finally allowed to play basketball, and they were ready for it. And there's been teams in the past, and our peers around the league in the past and this year as well, that weren't ready to make that jump from T-ball to baseball, so to speak. It's almost that same level of, you've been playing basketball with the training wheels on. You have to be ready to take those off when you get to the tournament. These guys were ready. They were anxious to play. They were ready to go. They wanted to play basketball. They got their chance and they did it. And that's just what it looked like. They were free. They were going, and they were having a great time, having fun playing basketball, not being held back by the way that the game is officiated and structured in the Mountain West, which is
Yeah.
almost a different sport at times. But this team was ready to take advantage of that, and this is what happens. You win by 16 points.
Ton of credit to the players, ton of credit to the coaching staff. I thought that this was, they had them, they had it dead to rights. They were so well prepared.
Right.
They had answers for everything. They had counters for everything. It was brilliant. It was a brilliantly planned, brilliantly executed game. Let's talk about Purdue now here. Round of
Let's do
32
it.
game. Utah State draws, as I said, the number one seeded Boilermakers. That game will be tipping off Sunday at, oh, what is it?
12:40, I think, here, right?
12:40 Mountain Time, 2:40 Eastern, I believe, from Indianapolis. Obviously playing for the right to go to the Sweet 16. I don't know when the last time, I think it was like 1970, 70 or 71, the last time that Utah State won multiple games in the NCAA tournament. The tournament was structured a little bit differently then, so I don't know that they were
Right.
calling it the Sweet 16. It doesn't happen a lot, regardless of how how long it has been. It doesn't happen a lot. It is a rare opportunity for Utah State. And it's one that I think is legitimately an opportunity. I do not think that this is a dead on arrival. There's no way around these guys. There are some top seeds in this tournament that I would not have a ton of confidence in Utah State's ability to not just win, but to keep
Yeah,
up. Like I don't know that
exactly.
Utah State would beat UConn or Houston, or be really all that competitive with UConn or Houston. I think those are the two best teams in the country.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Like, of the one seeds, UConn and Houston, you're lucky to not draw them. North Carolina, maybe, just because I think there's kind of a gap between those two. That's not a slight on North Carolina, but especially the way Utah State would have matched up with UConn and Houston, wouldn't have been good, I don't think.
Well, and that's true for almost every team in America. Those are, I think those are
That's
firmly
true.
the two best teams in the country. I think UConn is one of the best teams in recent memory in college basketball from what I
Yeah.
have seen of them. And
UConn's
yeah,
unbelievable.
and Houston probably not far behind, if behind at all. Purdue is really good. Purdue is 30-4 for a reason.
Yes.
Purdue
Yeah,
won the
true.
outright Big Ten championship for a reason. It earned the one seed for a reason. They're fourth in KenPom or third in KenPom. They were top three all but one game this season. They were fourth briefly, and they responded by beating Arizona in a semi home game, and then they jumped right
Yeah.
back into the top three, and they have
Yep.
not left since. They rolled to a win over Grambling State in the first round, 16th seeded Grambling State. They had a little bit, I wouldn't even say they had a little bit of trouble in the first half. They needed a little bit to take over the game, but then once it got into the second half, they really stepped on the gas and didn't have a ton of issue. This is obviously, I think people know the headliner here being Zach Edey.
Yeah.
That's probably a place to start when you're previewing Purdue. Realistically speaking, there are other players here worth considering. There are other good players on the team, but Zach Edey is the he's the guiding force behind that team. He is. I don't know if they've announced like the actual player of the year yet. It is widely assumed that he will be the back-to-back Naismith player of the year. He's tremendous. He is there's really not, I don't know that anybody has successfully slowed him down in like 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, yes.
He just
That is true.
he yeah, I'm looking at the season log here. He's not had a single game under without scoring in double figures. I think he's only had, yeah, as I'm looking at it, two games with fewer than 15 points at 10 and 13. Everything else is up over that, and most of them are up over 20 or 30.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's a walking double-double. He's one of the best shot blockers in the country. He gets to the free throw line a ton. He is who he is, and I don't think that he will catch anybody by surprise. It's not exactly, if you're getting caught by surprise by a 7 foot 4, 300-pound guy, you weren't looking very closely. You were distracted. You were doing something else.
Yeah,
He's
that's exactly right.
tremendous, and he is the, you know, he is the central force here. If you can't figure out a way, not even to slow him down, because you really can't slow him down all that much, but just to limit the amount of damage that he does
Yeah.
to 20 and 10, right? You know, 20 points, 10
Yeah.
rebounds, maybe an assist or two. And you get him into, you know, he doesn't pick up fouls very often, despite being 7 foot 4, which I think is maybe, I think that I think that maybe he has found a nice little path as, if you foul on every possession, then they won't call it, and
Yeah.
that's fair. They won't, and for the most part, they
Yeah,
don't.
he
And
also
that's,
didn't play in the Mountain West, so
he
that
didn't play.
helps.
Yeah, you put him in the Mountain West. He's spending some time on the bench,
Yeah,
but.
this dude, nobody knows this guy's name if he plays in the Mountain West.
An indictment on the
He's
league
losing,
a little
yeah, he's losing
bit.
Sixth Man of the Year to Josh Adjuge if this
Yeah,
guy is
yeah.
in the Mountain West.
This guy can't stay on the court. He's so good when he's on the court. They
Yeah.
just everything he does is called a foul. Yeah, I prefer certainly the lower foul call approach than I do the higher foul call approach, as does Purdue and as does Utah State. But when you're previewing this guy's, it has to start with him. It has to start with finding ways just to limit the damage that he does. You know, like I said, 20 and 10 rather than 30 and 20, which is what he legitimately has the. I think he did actually go 30 and 20 against Grambling State. I don't know the. I'll pull up the exact numbers. Yeah, 30 points and 21 rebounds with 3 blocks, 2 assists, and 2 fouls in 31
Yeah,
minutes against Grambling
that
State.
sounds right.
I don't know that that's even the first time that he has done that, or at least come close to it this season.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say that it's not, and I'm not even gonna check
Yeah.
because I know I'm
Yep.
right
You're
on
right. He also did it against Penn State.
that
He had actual 30 straight
one.
on the nose, 30 and 20 against Penn State in January. He might
Yeah,
have
well,
done it
there it
again
is.
since then. But you know, that's where it has to start, and I don't really like,
Yeah.
you just kind of have to make do. And I think that Utah State is better positioned to do that than most teams. Specifically because Utah State, kind of like Purdue, and Danny Sprinkle sort of mentioned this, that Matt Painter is a guy he has a lot of respect for because he's another guy who likes to get the ball into the post, which is sort of a dying breed in college basketball.
Right.
Purdue will shoot the three. They're very, very good at shooting the three. They don't do it as much as a lot of teams. They're 238th in 3-point attempt rate, but
Right. Well, they have Zach Edey, so
yeah,
why
they
would
have Zach Edey, but this is very much a team that's kind of built like teams used to be built, where it's not positionless. There's positions. They have full on positions on the team. They have a
Yeah.
true point guard with Braden Smith. They have a shooting guard and small forward with Lance Jones and Fletcher Loyer. They have an actual 6'9", 230, built like a power forward in Trey Kaufman Wren, and then they have a center. And that is like a lot of teams in the way that college basketball is currently built, the way that a lot of teams operate, don't have that. They don't have a center. They don't have guys who can really reasonably try to handle anything that Zach Edey is doing in the post. They're built to shoot threes and they're built to have guard play. And I think that Purdue has, you know, designed this team around countering that, which is great when you play most teams in college basketball. And it's why they're 30 and 4 and they're as good as they are, is that they're well built to handle all of that. I do think Utah State has something that a lot of teams Purdue has played this season don't have, which is three bigs who can legitimately play minutes in an NCAA tournament game. They have three legitimate bigs, 7-foot Isaac Johnson, 6'11" Khalifa Sacco, and then 6'9", 260 Great Osabor. Those guys
can play.
None
of them are the same, by the way.
Like, what's that?
Well, none of them are the same. It's not three of this. You know, you don't have three carbon copies of Great Osabor. You have three bigs that can give you different looks. So yeah. I was just adding that, but go ahead.
Yeah, and so that is, you know, if you have to play Purdue, it is better at least to have guys in the post who can, physically speaking, at least try to hold their own. And you get, you know, like sometimes you get these matchups with Purdue, like the Grambling State game was like this, where even when Grambling State was kind of in the game in the first half, you're just looking at it and you're like, there's like nobody above 6'6" on this team. How are they going to do this? And the answer is they won't do it. And Purdue does that to a lot of teams. I don't really think that is, you know, an easy said and done solution against Utah State, because Utah State has functional bigs. It has size in the way that, like, and depth in the way that most teams in college basketball just don't have anymore.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, you're absolutely right. This is a very, very good basketball team. We can talk about how we like this matchup more so than we would like UConn or Houston, but let's not kid ourselves. This is a very good team. They're a one seed for a reason. We can even look back, you know, the past few years of Purdue basketball in the postseason has not been promising. Again, let's not kid ourselves. This is a very, very good team, and that does go with Zach Edey. That this team lives and dies with Zach Edey, who is a tremendous basketball player. Now, I think, as you mentioned, Utah State. So first of all, I mean, this team is not unbeatable. They look unbeatable sometimes, but they're not unbeatable.
Yeah.
And Zach Edey is not unstoppable. He is sometimes. He plays games where he is unstoppable. He gets 30 and 20. We just said that. Sometimes he's unstoppable, but as a force of nature, he's not an unstoppable one. Even, you know, there's no way he's stronger than Jaden Ledeen, right? Like he doesn't have it all. He has flaws. He has weaknesses, and we have guys that I think can play to those weaknesses. You mentioned the bigs that we have. I think that's a huge part of this game, because what you'll a lot of times see coaches try to do when you have somebody like Zach Edey, they'll try to do one of two things, and they'll say, okay, we're going to address the 7-4, you know, elephant in the room head on, and we're going to attack him. We're going to front guard him. We're going to double team him all game long. And we're going to, you know, we're going to meet them where they're at. Yep. Or they have other, you know, the other approach is, we're going to pretend he doesn't exist. We're going to make sure nobody else gets theirs, and we're going to force Zach Edey to win the game.
Yeah.
Both of those neither of those work, because these guys have won 30 games. What it needs to be, and I'm not blaming coaches, I'm not saying I'm smarter than coaches, you do that based on your personnel. Sometimes that's your only option. What your approach needs to be is a little bit of both. You have to minimize the damage he does, while also making sure he's the only one doing damage. You know, you can try to slow him down, but you also have to make sure everybody else is slowing down too. I think we have the personnel that can do that. You have guys on offense that can force Zach Edey to come out of the post. You know, Great Osabor is good enough with the ball in his hands outside of the key that they have to bring Zach out of the post.
Yeah.
Or they can bring somebody else on him, and Great just goes to work.
Yeah.
So they have to make that decision at some point. That is a luxury that a lot of teams don't have. If they bring him out, then we just back cut him with Isaac Johnson, who is pretty quick and also very tall. Johnson can do that as well. Johnson can draw him out of the paint. Well, Great, or, you know, probably not Great because he'd be on him, but somebody else can back cut. Mason Falstaff, we've seen, he loves to back cut. He loves that.
Yeah.
So there's ways that we can try to move around Zach Edey. We can try to mitigate what he can do on defense when he's playing defense.
Yeah.
On offense, it's his game. They run their offense. We have to react to that. That's the nature of defense. It has to be, at least to some level, it has to be reactionary. We've seen Danny Sprinkle get around that, and sometimes his defense can dictate the way an offense runs. I don't know that we can do that against Purdue, but we do have guys in place that can be reactionary to a high degree, and I think hang in there with them. Like I said before, Zach Edey is not stronger than Jaden Ledeen, and we saw what Great Osabor can do against Aiden Ladie. That was a war that we saw a few times this year, and it was awesome. There's still a size disadvantage there, but we're not helpless on either side of the ball against Zach Edey. And I think even around that, we have the guards and, you know, guys like Mason Falslev and Ian Martinez that can make the rest of the team pay on both sides of the ball as well. That I really don't hate this matchup, but I think we have the tools to do something interesting against this team.
Yeah, I've got. I was looking through the losses for Purdue. Like I said, there are only four of them. There are a couple things here that connect these losses. One, I do think it is worth mentioning, just as an interesting tidbit, not as something that can be extrapolated. Yeah. It just doesn't work like this. I will say, only one of the four teams that has successfully beaten Purdue this year is playing in the round of 32. The other three either didn't make the tournament or are already out. Nebraska's already out. Ohio State didn't make the tournament. Wisconsin's already out. Northwestern is the only one that is still playing basketball this weekend.
Northwestern, by the way, beat them once. Mm-hmm. You're probably getting to this, so I'm stealing your thunder here. Beat them once, took them to overtime the second time. Northwestern is like Purdue's Fresno State a little bit.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that Northwestern is a pretty good basketball team, but like Northwestern just had their number a little bit this year.
Yeah, and I think that the key for Northwestern probably will not necessarily apply fully to Utah State. There is a, like I said, there is a connecting tissue that I'm going to get to. Northwestern mostly did that by hitting 10 of 23s in the win and 14 of 27 in the loss. I don't know if Utah State will do that. That's probably asking a little.
We have
that's probably
done
asking
it.
A little much. They've done it once.
It's possible.
it is possible in theory. but the main thing that I see that connects these losses for Purdue more than anything else is that none of these teams turned the ball over. Northwestern had three. Nebraska had nine. Ohio State had six, and Wisconsin had five. None of them lost the turnover battle. None of them really even came all that close to losing the turnover battle. This isn't a Purdue team that really seems to care all that much about the turnover battle. They barely force turnovers. They don't really need to. Because they have a 7'4", 300-pound guy in the middle of their defense. But they do turn the ball over some. They're up at 143rd in offensive turnover rate. You can turn these guys over sometimes. And I think that is, more than anything else, the key here is that Utah State has to be as clean as it was offensively, passing the ball, not making silly mistakes, as it was against TCU. That is the start. If you turn the ball over against these guys, you will lose. You cannot give them. They're going to get extra possessions. They're going to get extra shots. You don't need to offer more up.
Yeah, don't help them.
Like, at least make them rebound the ball. At least make them go and get it. You can't. The free points just do it. It doesn't work. It's a non-starter against these guys. It does not work. The approach that all of these teams have taken to Edey is different. Northwestern doesn't really have a dominant big, so they just sort of threw bodies at him and hope for the best and let him do what he was going to do. He had 35 and 14 in that game, and then it won the matchups everywhere else. Boo Booey had 31 points. They got 20 from Ryan Landborg and 21 from Ty Berry, all of whom are guards. Their guards outplayed Purdue's guards. That is one approach. I think that Utah State's guards can at least...
First approach I mentioned.
Yeah.
And it worked for these guys.
Like, that is... If at the very least, I think Utah State's guards can keep up with these guards, if not outplay them. I trust Darius Brown more than I trust Braden Smith. And that's not a slight of Braden Smith, who's had a great season. Darius Brown's just a better point guard than he is because he's 26 years old. It is what it is. Like, Braden Smith is a sophomore. He's a super talented sophomore. I like Darius Brown in that matchup. I think he's a better player. I think Mason Falslev and Ian Martinez and Josh Adugie can all hang with guys like Lance Jones and Fletcher Lawyer. And you know, Mason Gillis is kind of a forward for them, but he'll shoot sometimes. He'll step out. He's a really good 3-point shooter. They have those guys, right? They have those kind of guard wing players. Ethan Morton does a little bit of that as well. He doesn't play a ton. But I feel pretty good about that part of the matchup. I think that that part, Utah State is totally fine. It really does kind of, it comes down to how much you can limit Zach Edey. And I think on the aggressive side, you get this comparison with, like, Nebraska had some success with this. Ohio State doesn't really have a dominant big, but Wisconsin had some success with this too. If you have a really good big who is quicker than Zach Edey, you can score on him. Rink Mast, who Utah State is familiar with from last year, I don't think they actually got to play him, but he was, I think he was at Bradley last year. I remember writing a preview about them and talking about, like, how he could be a factor, and then I don't know if he even played in the game. I think he might have been hurt. Such is life. But he's 6'10", 248. He had a great game against Edey. He had 18 points and 4 boards and 3 assists, and really kind of, I mean, he outscored him. He had 18 and Edey had 15 and really kind of slowed him down. You can do that. That's an option. I think that that's probably at least a little bit more appealing for Utah State because it does have somebody like Great Osabor. Wisconsin with Stephen Crowell and Tyler Wall as well had some of the same success. Crowell is 7 foot, 247. He's not, it's a different physical, you know, body type there. It's Great Osabor's quite a bit faster and just, you know, quicker than most guys that big. And that's true of Crowell as well. And I think that it's probably, for Utah State, the path to victory is probably a combination of the two. You need your guards to outplay those guards. That is not impossible. And then you need the combination of centers to, one, stay in the game. You can't have, you know, like, if Khalifa Sacco wants to pick up 4 fouls in 15 minutes, you can live with that. Isaac Johnson can't be on the bench for 30 minutes. Great Osabor certainly can't be on the bench for 30 minutes. And you need those three to team up and just sort of pick away at him, pick away at the inside of this defense, and find, you know, advantages athletically, you know, quickness laterally, things like that. Because for as great as Zach Edey is, he's 7'4" and 300 pounds, and the laws of physics do apply to him. It is not, you cannot get away from the fact that he is 300 pounds and 7'4". He's not extremely, you know, quick-footed. I don't think that I'm insulting him by saying he doesn't move all that well because he's giant. It is what it is.
He's good at other things.
Yeah, he has other strengths. Great Osabor is faster than Zach Edey is. He just is. And I think that physically he can hold up to the amount of pressure that is put on you by playing against Zach Edey. I don't think that there's a player in college basketball who Great Osabor is not at least as strong as. Is not at least, you know, able to...
If there's one, it's Jaden Ledee, because he's like, the strongest person in the world. I've seen him enough. He's got some muscle on him.
And Great held his own in all three of those matchups, you know, in the paint especially. And the thing that Ledee does that really kills you is that he just knocks down contested mid-range jumpers all game. If Zach Edey is shooting mid-range jumpers, you're fine. You're total... Okay, yeah, go ahead. You shoot those mid-range jumpers. That's fine by me. But keeping guys out of the post, Great has done really well at recently, and I think that is something that Utah State will need from him here. It's an oversimplification of the path, but that's the deal, right? That's the thing with Purdue. They're gettable if you execute at an extremely high level. I think it would take another, you know, it would be basically back-to-back best performance of the season. I don't really know that that's like a hot take or anything. They're a number one
seed. This is a one seed.
You're basically playing a one seed on the road. It is what it is. You have to play pretty much perfectly. But I think that Utah State has the guys, has the body types and the various strengths that you would want to have to try and spring an upset here. They have to be perfect. They have to have it. They have to have a game plan just as strong as the one that they had for TCU. They have to, the effort has to be just like what it was. They have to be together for the entire game. They need all of those guys who, you know, are peripheral contributors who can step up. They need all of them to step up, but they just did that. They did that, you know, 48 hours before, even less than that, less than 48 hours before they'll take the floor again. They did that. It is not impossible. They can do this. They're capable of doing it. They just showed that they're capable of doing it.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, like I said, I can't remember what order I mentioned them in, but you know, there's the two strategies of trying to stop great or trying to stop Edie and forcing the rest of the team to beat you. There's the opposite. There's trying to stop the rest of the team and forcing Zach Edie to beat you. Those two approaches have been tried before. They're not going to work. Utah State, I do think, is uniquely positioned to attack both head on. You can attack Zach Edie on both sides of the floor. You can get him uncomfortable, and you can also win all the other matchups with the guys that we have. I think you can really exploit Zach Edie has other strengths. He's not fast. You can exploit that in transition. There's ways to exploit that this team can figure out. If anybody can figure it out, I wouldn't put it past Danny Sprinkle. He knows the game of basketball pretty well.
Yeah.
Would be, a pretty huge understatement there. And he's got a good team. You kind of talked about that comparison with the TCU game. That's what it has to be. It just absolutely has to be a game plan as perfect as it was against TCU, and it has to be executed as perfectly. And even then, we are still talking about a one seed. We could have a really, really great game and lose by double digits. That is just the fact of the matter here. An upset is on the table. An upset is possible. I feel good about Purdue. I feel as good about this game as I would against any other one seed, if not better. It's still going to take a lot. We're still talking about a one seed. It's possible, but it's going to be a tall, tall task for for this team.
Yep. The margins are thin. Welcome to March and basketball in March. That is that. That's
Absolutely.
Utah State's not been here in a minute. The margins are thin. It is. It will take. It will take a lot. I don't think it's impossible. Unless you have anything else, Parker, I think that we will end this one there. Again, kind of just a quicker emergency episode of sorts. We will be back, of course, with a full show at some point, or perhaps another emergency show, depending on what happens on Sunday afternoon. You got anything else?
No, I'd prefer to do another emergency show after another win. So hopefully we can do that again, but that's all I got.
Yep, we'll talk to you all soon.